We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Six minutes after 7 o'clock on a Saturday evening, in a world, some would say, without sports. I don't know if Jim O'Brien would describe it that way, though. Would you, my friend Jim O'Brien, would you say this is a world without sports?
I think that it could be a break for many of us, and I've made my life off of sports, but it might remind us that there are major concerns and bigger things for us to solve right now than whether or not we're going to have a Pitt football season or a Steelers Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's been tough, though, for a lot of people.
Tough.
It's been tough, yeah.
It's difficult. I ask your producer or engineer to turn up the volume when I'm on because I know he had to lower it for Arnold Staples. I would get along fine, Len. And Arnold would be happy to know that when Kathy and I got married, our wedding reception was at the Croatian Club in Duquesne.
Oh, my goodness.
My mother-in-law is from Duquesne, Barbara Stepetic. We have lots of relatives from Duquesne. When I was a senior at Pitt, I was the public relations man for the Duquesne Ironman and then the Pittsburgh Valley Ironman football team. So I know Duquesne well, and I know that when I went to Kennywood Park, I always could look across the bridge at Duquesne and know that I knew people there. So Arnold and I would have no problem getting along.
Oh, yeah, indeed. And, you know, Arnold is also an old DJ, an old music guy. So Arnold could probably talk to you about every musician that ever played in Duquesne. And, yep, you two would get along fine. Arnold
right.
is a good guy.
And he's a mere child compared to me. He's 70 years old. And I'm 77. I'll be 78 in August. And but I'm still going strong, even if I'm not protesting anything.
There you go. But the one thing you have done, Jim, is you've taken advantage of this moment. And, you know, some people, I know some sports people who have not been able, they've been stuck right in this place where the world of sports kind of stopped, and they stopped. They just froze. They didn't know what else to do.
Well, you know, I'm almost finished writing my latest book, mm-hmm. and it's about basketball players, very intimate portraits of people who played professional basketball. And one of the things that I see there is that a lot of the players, once they were done playing basketball, had no idea what to do with the rest of their lives. And some of them, take George Thompson, who played for the Pittsburgh Condors. What did he do whenever basketball was over? He went to work for a company, Stratton & Briggs in Milwaukee, and worked for the 30-some years. Charlie Williams, who played for the Pipers and the Condors, he went to work for first Armco Steel and then AK Steel, and worked for them for 30-some years. But so many of the basketball players were lost without being able to play the game. And I think that people who are completely lost without sports got to get a life.
And so was that unique to basketball players? By the way, Jim O'Brien, I don't know if you heard my comment, I guess I should say, that my father, who is most likely downstairs listening, he would be upset if I didn't just mention to you that he went to Westinghouse High School with Chuck Cooper. I can't have a conversation about basketball without saying that.
There's a good example. For instance, at Westinghouse High School, and by the way, Chris Moore did a wonderful documentary about Westinghouse High School. Their football coach, who won all the City League titles, was from my hometown of Hazelwood, Pete D'Imperio, who lived on Tecumseh Street and whose family owned a supermarket in Hazelwood.
Oh, yeah. But, well, you know, his wife was my fifth grade teacher.
Okay. Well, if you go to Westinghouse High School, there's a wall of fame there. Mm-hmm. And it has the framed photographs of some of the more distinguished graduates of Westinghouse High School, including Chuck Cooper, including Bill Nunn Jr., including the judge, Brian, and people who became teachers, people who became school administrators, mm-hmm. judges. And I talked to two basketball coaches who coached there, and neither one of them was aware about the Hall of Fame. And my feeling is, if you're a teacher in that school, you have to make sure that your students see that Hall of Fame so that they understand that you can go to Westinghouse High School and you can accomplish great things. Westinghouse and Shenley High School, for instance, both, an unbelievable number of accomplished musicians and artists. So the greatness lies within the individual, not necessarily the community. And one of the things that I did during this pandemic is I wanted to make sure that I got something done. And I remember Myron Cope, when I met him when I was 14 years old at the Pitt Field House, I said, "Mr. Cope, what do I have to do to become a writer?" And Myron, in his own inimitable style, said, "Ken, you got to sit down and start writing." And I've been at it ever since, and it's true. You have to sit down and start writing. And that's what I've been doing all this time, is taking advantage of staying home by getting up early, sitting down, and writing my stories. And I'm very happy that I'm able to do that. As long as I keep my mind, and it is diminished from what it was 5 years ago, but as long as I keep my mind and my enthusiasm, I can still accomplish great things.
Oh, absolutely. So why basketball for the latest book? Why basketball?
Well, I covered the ABA and the ABL in Pittsburgh, and I also went to Miami and I covered the ABA there. I covered the pro basketball for 9 years for the Sporting News, which was traditionally a baseball weekly, and I was the founding editor of Street and Smith's basketball yearbook starting in 1970, and I did it for 30-some years, and it was the number one selling basketball magazine in America. So I do have a background, and in fact, Lynn, I purposely covered all sports because I didn't want to be a one-trick pony, and I was more interested, frankly, in the stories and people than I was being interested in any particular sport. So I'm a writer about people.
Interesting. You know, we got to take a quick break. Let's do that and then come back. Stick around. Jim O'Brien is my guest. You're listening to KDKA. We got a lot more to talk about. We'll be right back. We're back on a Saturday afternoon on KDKA Radio. I am Lynn Hayes Freeland. Jim O'Brien is my guest. His newest book, which will, and I'm not sure when, he'll be able to tell us when, will be available, a basketball memoir, U.S. Basketball Writers Hall of Fame, Looking Up Once Again. Talk to me about the title, Looking Up Once Again.
Well, my last book, the prequel to this book, was called Looking Up Once More. And I'm going to do a third book. There'll be a trilogy to this because I just have too many stories to tell, too much material. There's about 34 metal cabinets in my next room filled with photographs, clippings, newspaper, letters, all sorts of notes. And I'm going to keep on writing some books. In fact, I've already got a little bit of a head start on the next book. And for your dad, by the way, you didn't tell me, what's your dad's first name?
Randy. Randall.
Randy. Mm-hmm. Okay, I know Randy's listening because he's one of your most faithful listeners. Randy, I'm going to get a book to Lynn called Looking Up, and there's a chapter on Chuck Cooper.
Ah,
I met the man.
Okay.
I've interviewed him. He was most impressive off the court as he was on the court. He's now in the Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield, Massachusetts. He's the first black man to be drafted into the NBA by the Boston Celtics. And when Walter Brown, the owner, drafted him, the man at the next table said to him, "You know he's colored, don't you?" And he said, "I don't care if he's purple or pinstriped. We select Charles Cooper, Duquesne." And one of his best friends on the team, a man who took him to different clubs and so forth, especially jazz clubs, was none other than Bob Cousy, who grew up in the city of New York, went to Holy Cross College, but he was one of his best friends on the team. The first black to play in a game was Earl Lloyd from West Virginia State, and the first black to sign a contract to play in the NBA was Nat Sweetwater Clifton, who played for the Harlem Globetrotters and then played for the New York Knicks in the NBA. And a fellow that I've written about for my new book also holds a record, and I didn't know this until I saw a story on WQED the same day I watched the Westinghouse documentary. It was about Jim Tucker, and Jim Tucker played with Dick Ricketts and Cy Hugo Green at Duquesne University when they had one of the best basketball teams in the country. And Jim Tucker, who is still alive but suffers from Alzheimer's, Jim Tucker was the first player to have the fastest triple-double in the NBA, and he did it in about 17 minutes, which was even faster than Michael Jordan ever did it. So Pittsburgh has a lot of history-making individuals that I'm sure those names are familiar to you, Randy.
Indeed. Well, and you know what? It's funny because now is Duquesne, aren't they renaming something on the campus after Chuck Cooper?
Yes, they're putting a lot of money into a new bill, into renovating Palumbo Hall, and they're going to call the arena itself after Chuck Cooper, or perhaps the name of the floor itself, which they've done in a lot of college campuses. But he should be remembered. And there's somebody else that was on that same team, Lynn, that would actually be good fodder for your Sunday afternoon TV show. And that's Dr. Fletcher Johnson, who was the best sixth man in the country on those mid-50 Duquesne teams. And the only reason he was the sixth man was that even at a Catholic school such as Duquesne University, there was a quota system. You were only allowed to recruit so many blacks in one particular year, and you were only allowed to have as many as three on the court at the same time. So Fletcher Johnson, who was in ROTC at Duquesne, could not qualify for medical school when he graduated, ended up going to medical school in Europe, taught in French, which he had to learn, and he became a famed heart surgeon in New York, and I call him the real Dr. J.
So let me ask you this. You can hear me, yes?
I can hear you.
Okay, all right. So I'm curious because, and you know, I am a Duquesne alum, and I always felt like Duquesne had a richer basketball history than some people gave us credit for. But when you look at Duquesne's history and you look at the history at Pitt, I've often wondered why a professional basketball team, the NBA, never flourished here in Pittsburgh.
Well, the main reason is that no one with real money, nobody that was well fixed, ever came forward and wanted to finance a basketball franchise. So we've never had serious money behind a team. I think, and the other thing is, we are a small market, so it would be a challenge because you have professional hockey here. You have baseball. You have football. So it would be tough on the market. But I think had the Pipers stayed here the year after they won the initial ABA championship in 1968, that we might have had a chance and you might have an NBA team in Pittsburgh today. When I worked in New York, Commissioner David Stern, who knew I was from Pittsburgh, would often say to me, Jim, when are you going to get us a team in Pittsburgh? But the main reason is we never had substantial money.
So you kind of needed that backer, huh? Interesting,
yes.
Because I've always wondered about that because we're such a sports town. It seems like we'll follow. I always tell my son anything with a ball or a puck, we follow here in Pittsburgh. But I just never quite understood that. And because there is a love for basketball here. There's a love for basketball.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. When Pitt's basketball team was playing well, I remember John Steigerwald said that the best sports atmosphere in Pittsburgh was the Pitt Fieldhouse, and that was whenever Charles Smith and Jerome Lane and Sean Miller and that group were playing. Duquesne has not been in the right conference to be considered real big-time basketball over the last 20-some years. Sid D'Ambrosio's son, Keith, Sid had played at Duquesne whenever they had the great teams. His son had a 20-win season last year. I think it was 21 wins. And he's brought them back quite a way. But as long as they're in the Northeast Conference and Pitt is in the ACC, and I think Pitt's always going to have a tough time in the ACC because so many of the teams there are so well established as far as national basketball powers are concerned. Kids want to go to Duke. Kids want to go to North Carolina State, and especially if they're in basketball country. So that's something that Pitt has to overcome. But I think that people are pretty excited about the start that Jeff Capel, who knows what you need to win in the ACC from his experience as a player and coach at Duke under Mike Krzyzewski, he knows the kind of players you need to be successful. So we're rooting for him to be able to compete.
I was going to say, Jeff Capel brings a different energy or a new energy. Maybe that's it. He brings a new energy to the city, to Pitt, and I think a lot of people are excited about that. I'm not sure that we have enough time to do this before the news, so I hesitate to do it. But I do think it's because you did send me a photograph of the cover of the book, and I'm just not sure if there's enough time to get into this or not before we take a break. But I'm looking at the back cover of your book, and it says, so it's a love story, too, with a great game and a brown-eyed girl.
Well, that's my wife, Kathy, who knows more nowadays about sports than I do by osmosis. And when she and her father went to see a Pittsburgh Phantom soccer game at Forbes Field, I knew that she was going to be a great wife for a sports writer because I was never even a big fan of soccer. But if she was willing to go with her dad to Forbes Field to watch the Pittsburgh Phantoms play, I knew that she would be a good wife for me. And she used to keep stats. She used to put the schedules together for my Street and Smith publications. And at one time, she was a big hit at cocktail parties because she knew the location of every Division I college in America. She knew their colors, and she knew the nickname of the team. I mean, if you said UC Cal Irvine, she would say the Anteaters. So she knew her nicknames, not quite as good anymore because she hasn't done that for a number of years, but she was a big help to me.
Oh, yeah, you knew that was a perfect fit. All right, we got to take a break. We have a lot more to talk about with Jim O'Brien. It's a Saturday night on KDKA. You know, this is my first Saturday evening working, but I think I kind of like it. I like the feel of the Saturday night. I might have to do this again. We'll take a break for the news and be right back.